You're listening to Star Wars Splash Page Comics in Review.
It's the 2020 Christmas Hanza Quantica Holiday Spectacular, otherwise known as episode number 213. Hi, Jeff. Happy holidays.
Geek me all knowing box set, stay open May 4th. I'm hoping we're gonna be hot as before, cause Red looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
And happy holidays to you, Matt. What did you call it? Chris Mahana Quantica. Gotcha.
I like to meld it all into one.
Yeah, as you are.
Yep. We actually have two new comics out this week, 2 days before Christmas, the Christmas holiday. It's kind of cool.
It's a Christmas miracle.
especially since one of them is an IDW publishing book.
So. Right, exactly.
I know, that was not really fair.
But yeah. But do we have any news besides the two books that we've got this week?
Oh, we do. Of course it concerns IDW.
Of course.
Star Wars Adventures number 4, not coming out January 13. It's coming out January 27. Star Wars Adventures number 5, not coming out January 13. It's now set for February 17th. Interestingly enough, Star Wars Adventures number 6 is still set for February 17th. But, you know, 5 will get to 10. That will change.
I would be surprised if it did not, yes.
Yeah. Guess what, Jeff? January 6th, Marvel, Star Wars, The High Republic, number 1, comes out.
January 6th, cannot wait.
Guess what comes out January 27th? Star Wars, The High Republic, number 1, the second printing.
Oh, they're already going to a second printing even before the first one has come out.
Yeah, so that right there shows you that there is a very healthy demand for this first issue. And as a matter of fact, there is such a healthy demand that the retailers are commissioning retailer exclusive variants. You know, the most recent one announced was Will Sliney, who, of course, illustrated the rise of Kylo Ren and several other Star Wars comics.
Right.
And who's been on the show a couple of times. He is doing an exclusive cover variant for WantedComics.com, which went on sale yesterday, because the podcast comes out Wednesday, so it will have gone on sale the day before, which means it will be sold out.
Right.
So don't even try to get it. So, there you go.
Awesome.
Also, speaking of Star Wars, The High Republic, on January 4th, they are going to be hosting a Star Wars The High Republic live stream event. So, Gavin Scott and Daniel Jose Older, who are writing the High Republic and the High Republic Adventures, should be involved with that as well. So definitely it's going to be all Star Wars High Republic all the time. But that said, there are still other Star Wars comics. And that's the important thing. And we have two of them this week.
Yes,
including finally for readers on the U.S. side of the Atlantic, the adaptation of the Greg Rucka written young adult novella Star Wars Smuggler's Run, and of course that came out a long time ago. It was part of that run up to a Journey to Star Wars The Force Awakens. And much like they're doing with the High Republic, you know, where they had novels and stories and comics and young adult novellas and whatnot. So this is going to be pretty cool, I think, because it essentially takes that Greg Rucka written novel. Really, Nigel? Nigel, come
on. I was about to ask if Santa Claus was flying over your house. He was jingling and jangling.
Let's get your harness off. Come on. If you're going to scratch that hard, maybe you can get Pepper to bark and yap now. Nigel wears this. And for those of you who have not seen Nigel, he's a 90-pound-plus Valley Bulldog.
Winston Churchill in dog form, and you have Nigel.
With very human eyes. Yes. Around the Moore family compound, we refer to him as our land manatee. And I've also just this week started calling him my sweetie meaty boy, because he is very, very meaty.
Yes, so. he is a chonk.
But he has to wear this enormous harness because he is so powerful. I mean, he is like the juggernaut powerful. So he's actually dislocated my arm once because he darted off somewhere. Because then I was holding on too tight to the lead. So this week we've got Smuggler's Run, as I was saying, and it's been published before because it was part of a German language only four issue miniseries that was published in Panini Germany's Das Star Wars Universum magazine, and that was from January to March of 2018. And so IDW very wisely has taken this and adapted it for the English language market, which is a smart move for IDW because, you know, it's ready made, it's ready to go. And all they have to do is translate it into English, which is not that hard, especially if you know German like I do. So,
and even easier if you know German and English.
Exactly. So, unlike the original four issue miniseries, this one is actually being published as a two issue miniseries. So we're basically getting issues one and two, and then issues three and four in the second issue out next month, which is also why the book carries a $5.99 price tag. So, but enough of that. Shall we dive in?
Sure. Let's give it a quick once over. Okay. I have not read the novel because there were no pictures, but
there were. Which is why I'm a little surprised that you didn't read any of those novellas.
They
did have artwork in them by Phil Noto.
Then I have to go back and find them if Phil was involved.
Totally.
Now, this being basically a double issue, I was a little concerned when I started reading it that it was going to be a little too dense. But this thing clips along. I'm really impressed with this story and the way this was presented. I love the artwork. I love the way it's edited. It flows nicely. There's a lot of talking, but it never seems talky, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And of course, you know, that is thanks to the very, very superb adaptation by Alec Worley. And of course, you know, he took the Rucka written novella and adapted it for the four issue miniseries for medium of comics. Art, of course, is by Ingo Remling. And if you are a follower of the Twitter feed or the Facebook page, you will see from time to time we post his artwork because he's an amazing illustrator, and why he has not been recruited to do a Marvel book, I do not know. I mean, even not just Star Wars, you know, he should have a bigger audience. Not to say that the European audience is by any means small, but his work is very detailed, very precise, yet also quite realistic without being overbearingly realistic. And I think in part that's why Smuggler's Run as an adaptation for the medium of comics works so well. We should point out that the translation was done by Edward Govan. Of course, editor is Elizabeth Bry. Assistant editor is Riley Farmer. The lettering and the design were by Amari Osorio. So.
And again, everyone just working at the top of their game. I really love the way the Falcon is drawn here. I'm a real stickler for that because it's such an iconic ship, and it's a notoriously difficult ship to get right. But I think all of the ships in the book they've gotten a tremendous job done on all of them. I'll get my words out in a hurry. But the other thing that I was really impressed with was the dialogue. Han Solo's dialogue especially. I feel a lot of times in the Marvel books, his voice is captured, but with a few lapses here and there. Sometimes the jokes seem a little less than Han would be doing. But this time around, I think his jokes, his dialogue, his retorts are very much in keeping with the character we have from the movies. And
very, very much so. And I think that's a testament to, you know, how Greg Rucka sort of inhabited the character of Han. And then, of course, you know, at the same time, when Alec was doing his adaptation of Greg's novella, he didn't lose that voice.
No, not at all. Not at all. Really, all of the characters that we know, you know, even Chewie, the way Chewie reacts to everything is very much in keeping with his character. And, you know, you were talking about the realistic art style. Chewie, it's interesting. His eyes are very beady here, and we're not used to seeing that. The hair seems to be growing out of his eyes. It's a very interesting take on it. I don't mind it, It takes me out of it every once in a while, but it's not bad. It's just unique, and it's not one that I've ever seen before.
It is unique, and it's also artistic style.
Right.
And frankly, I would be somewhat upset if an artist, altered their personal style to fit a so-called house style.
True.
That's one of the reasons that I enjoy reading comic books is for the different artists, because each artist brings their own flavor, if you will, to what it is they're illustrating. And that's why we've been blessed with such a plethora of artists, from these new Star Wars comics since 2015, ranging from Elsa Chartier to Phil Noto to Angel Azueta, to Will Sliney or to Casper Wingard, and so many more. There's so many more names that we could drop here. But, for me, the way Ingo has captured these characters, and this story is essentially set, it's set between, Star Wars, A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back. And essentially what's happening here is that Leia has recruited Han and Chewie to rescue a Lieutenant Kalawan Imat. He's a recon commander who is a spy for the Rebel Alliance. And he is being hunted by Commander Beck of the Imperial Security Bureau on the Outer Rim planet of Sirkon. And of course, this all sort of ties in to the events of the sequel trilogy, because it shows, by going into the past, how things were being set up for the, after the eventual, at the time they were not aware that, for what would happen for when the New Republic was being set up. And it's a nice classic caper. And it's like we said, it's lushly illustrated. And yeah, it's got a lot of exposition. So in that sense, it sort of reminds me of like a Marvel Star Wars comic from the early 1980s. But like you said, it doesn't disrupt the story flow, and it just keeps it along at a really nice, solid, brisk pace.
It really does. And this new character that we have, Commander Beck, is again just another great creation in a long line of single-minded imperial bureaucrats and leaders. And this she's got, I guess, a cybernetic eye that she can see in the infrared, and that's how she finds that these people that they find on the ship are Shrikes. And again, we don't want to get too deep into this because we assume either people have read the book or we want them to go read the book and this comic. But again, this is a character that I've not seen anywhere else. I don't know what her ultimate fate is in the book. I have an idea as to why I haven't seen her elsewhere because of what happens in the book. But this is a really, really good story. The characters are all very competent. That's the thing that I liked about it, is the characters. We don't have anybody that acts stupidly, thus allowing some action to continue. Everything happens organically and happens as you would expect it to.
Yes, very much so.
Even from the standpoint of the Imperials.
This is not a comedy of errors. This is old school inspired Star Wars, I mean, the stormtroopers, they are connecting when they fire. The Imperial commanders and mid-level military managers are not made to be incompetent doofs. And of course, more importantly, Han and Chewie are still very much their reckless selves, not necessarily doomed to failure, but nor is success guaranteed, because they take some real risks here that may not pay off. Although, since we know who they are, we know what happens to them. Ultimately, yes, of course, the risks do pay off. But it does a really good job of showing the fact that they are, in fact, flawed characters and not these hero archetypes that are always successful.
Right. And again, I can't say enough about the artwork, the art and the colors. When they get to the city, what is it that they go to? Motok Control Tower, when they get to this city. Just the way it's drawn, it's so grimy and hazy, and they're so smoggy. It's just really phenomenal work.
It is, and it's got this realism that you just, sometimes you don't really see in comics that much anymore. And I think that's a product of the fact that this is coming from the European side of the comics medium, where the artwork, it's going to differ from country to country and from artist to artist. But you know, this to me evokes some of the stuff that you would see out of the French market, or you know, again, you know, on the show you hear us talk a lot about heavy metal or 2000 AD, and so it's got that gritty, grimy, lived-in feature, which is wholly appropriate given the fact that that's one of the things that I've always found personally very appealing about Star Wars, is it's not all chrome and gleaming surfaces. You know, it's dirty. It's lived in.
It is. It really is. And again, the, you know, the shading from it, when they get inside the city, there's a lot of yellow and darker browns and things like that. And I love the way that Han and Chewie get away from these bounty hunters. They turn the Imperials on the bounty hunters, and then they get away, and we don't know what's going to happen ultimately at the end of this book, because it ends on a bit of a cliffhanger. But I cannot wait. Do we know when is the next book coming out? Is it next month, or is it, do we have to wait a couple of months for it?
It's next month, you know, and provided that IDW doesn't have any shipping snafus, we should see it on January 27th, on Wednesday, January 27th, which, if that's the case, you know, prepare your wallet, because we've got, in addition to Smuggler's Run number 2, we've also got, like we said, you know, the High Republic number 1, second printing, Star Wars Adventures number 4, Bounty Hunters number 9, the first Dr. Aphra trade is being released that day, as well as the Beware Vader's Castle, which is collecting the Tales from Vader's Castle and Return to Vader's Castle miniseries as a hardcover. And then there's also trades for Star Wars Adventures Volume 11, The Rise of the Wookiees, and the Clone Wars Battle Tales miniseries collection is being released that day.
Competing with a lot of stuff that day.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, but it will be one of the 3 new books out that week. So that in and of itself will help it stand out.
I hope so, because it really is. Like I said, if you haven't read the book, like me. Or if you have read the book and you just like to see it translated, like I said, the artwork alone is worth the price of the book. But for somebody like me who hasn't read the book, it is really, really a good story. One of my favorite stories that I've read in a while from the Star Wars comics universe. So I definitely need to go back and check out the novella.
And again, this is a lushly illustrated book. It's simply gorgeous to behold. And again, like we've said, it's a superbly solid story, which is to be expected, again, because Greg Rucka wrote the novella. And Greg Rucka doesn't really write anything bad.
Exactly. I've never read anything by him that I didn't absolutely love.
Exactly. So yeah, definitely check this out. You know, it's a couple bucks more than what you pay for a comic book, but you're essentially getting 2 issues worth of material. So, I mean, that in and of itself, you know, makes it worth its value right then and there.
Exactly. And again, like I said, the artwork alone for me is worth it, because, you know, you talked about the artwork, the way Han Solo is drawn doesn't look like Harrison Ford, but you know exactly who it is. It's kind of like when they cast Alden Ehrenreich, I looked at him and I was like, oh, that's Han Solo.
Yeah.
And
you know, and
you
know,
look at this character like, oh, that's Han Solo.
And you know what it is? Because somehow Ingo has translated that Han Solo swagger.
Exactly.
Onto the printed page. So,
don't know how these guys do it, but it's absolutely amazing.
And look on the face, you know, like, you know, that almost like that crook of the crook of the mouth, you know, when he does that little smirk.
And, so, yeah, it's a vaguely anime inspired style, but far more realistic, not nearly as completely stylized.
Oh yeah. So
yeah, I really recommend this one. Again, I was pleasantly surprised. I didn't know what to think going into this, but I was pleasantly surprised at how much I enjoyed this book.
Also
good was Bounty Hunters number 8.
Oh man, this was crazy good. And a lot of little subtle throwbacks and mentions here, you know, peppered throughout this book. But hold on. Nigel, are you okay? Did you hear Nigel?
I did.
Sweetie, are you okay? It's a weird talk is weird. So all right. I apologize, everybody. My Nigel is acting a little
I'm leaving unusual. That in because that noise was, it was adorable.
It's like, hopefully he was agreeing with it. So.
Yes, he was. Hunters number 8. Yeah, like you said, lots of stuff peppered in and a lot going on. I started this book and I was thinking about halfway through, man, not a lot is happening here. And then they crammed about 3 stories worth of stuff into the last half of it, but it didn't feel rushed. But the cover of this book perfectly encapsulates the story because there's just a lot to take in.
Oh yeah, it's just, you know, this cover is nonstop melee, and this is an authentic comic book cover because, you know, what you see is what you get. You know, whereas a lot of comic books, you know, they show you a great cover that has absolutely nothing to do with the events told in that issue. So just, you know, all over the place on that one. And, you know, and that, I think that's been a hallmark of Bounty Hunter since the first issue is it's, you know, it's literally, you know, it's launched out of the gate with just this pent up equine energy, you know, just going literally flat out, you know, pedal to the metal and, you know, come hell or high water, just, you know, as fast as you can possibly go. And Ethan Sachs as a writer, I think he's very suited to that notion. You know, he is very, very much about keeping things always in motion. You know, it's, you know, he writes, I think, very energetic stories. And we have seen that very much so throughout Bounty Hunters, you know, and, you know, which is not surprising, you know, because I think we saw that also, you know, when he did the adaptation, or remember the miniseries in 2019. Gosh, 2019 seems so long ago.
Right.
You know, with Galaxy's Edge.
Yes.
So,
which again was much better than it had any right to be.
And this is true. This is true. But so yeah, this and you know, what's interesting is this is again, it's a new arc with, but it's not a traditional arc, you know. Because like the first 5 issues of Bounty Hunters were that one big arc, then we had 6 and 7, and now boom, we're jumping into Moving Target Part 1. So to bring everybody up to date, you know, Valance is, you know, basically, you know, the Unbroken Clan wants Valance dead. He's, you know, he had been chased by Zuckuss and 4 LOM.
Forlom.
For love of money. and so, you know, he sort of bought them off to give him some time to make his escape. Now we are seeing the repercussions of that. You know, so this is why we have the Terminus Gauntlet Part 1 Moving Target. As we said, written by Ethan Sachs, art by Paolo Villanelli, colors by Arif Prianto. Letters are by Virtual Calligraphy's Travis Lanham. The main cover, you know, is by Paolo Villanelli and Arif Prianto. There is an Empire Strikes Back variant by Chris Sprouse, Carl Story, and Niraj Menon. Production design is Nick Russell. The assistant editor, of course, is Tom Groneman. The editor is Mark Panizia. And for Lucasfilm, again, Robert Simpson is our senior editor. Michael Siglain, our creative director. Troy Alders, our art director. For the story group, we've got Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, and Emily Shkukani, and from the Lucasfilm Art Department, your friend and mine, Phil Shostak. You know, and essentially what this does is, you know, it sets us up here because, you know, Valance, he owes us a lot of favors to some powerful people, and he's kind of under the gun. I mean, he's a bounty hunter who is playing with the real possibility of having bounties on his head, which kind of severely limits what he can do and where he can go, but that's not going to stop him. So we open up and we are getting a flashback. And for
Shocker.
People, I know, but it melds very nicely. And it's done in a way that sets and pivots the story forward. And we are in the city of Howlan in Kulask then. And we see a Thai come screaming in and it's Han Solo, of all people. And Solo is being chased by 3 fighters. And we cut in, and there's an inset of Han going, "Well, I see him. I see him. A little help would be nice."
In true Han fashion.
So, and then a bolt comes in around him to assist him. And, you know, he thinks, "Great shot, Kanina." And that wasn't me, Solo. That was Valance. And again, if you cut back to the Han Solo Imperial Cadet miniseries, this is where we found, you know, in the new canon, if you will. And so these names are familiar to you. Kanina is, you know, was in the Han Solo Imperial Cadet miniseries, as were Litten and Tamu. So it's kind of home week, and I like the fact that we haven't forgotten who these characters are, and you know, it does make a lot of sense because Han and Valance do have this tie with each other. Pardon the pun there.
Well, and it's nice that that miniseries served more of a purpose than just setting up more backstory for Han. That he really was, you know, connective tissue and foundations for, you know, another ongoing series that we're going to get later and we didn't even know it. So it's just, you know, this story group just, it does a great job at setting those things up without making it obvious.
But exactly. And again, that's the beauty of this, of comics as a medium, you know, and, but at the same time, as we discover toward, you know, as we plow through this book, you know, it's also easy to reference other mediums as well. You know, for example, two words, Fennec Shand.
Right.
And then again, Tazu Leech. So right there, we've already referenced The Mandalorian, the TV show, and The Force Awakens, the movie. So.
And even if you don't know either one of those, the references are so fleeting that you don't have to know what they're talking about to know what they mean, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah. And that I think is where a lot of, you know, especially when you're dealing with, you know, an established intellectual property like Star Wars, you know, that's where things can quickly go off the rails because things can be so deeply intertwined or interconnected that it's almost like, you know, you have to have seen the episode with Fennec Shand and, you know, season one of The Mandalorian or season two of The Mandalorian. In this case, you don't. You know, that's like, oh, it's just, okay, it's an interesting name. I wonder what that means. So, but anyway, I got off on a tangent there. So essentially what has happened here is, you know we're cutting back to, you know, when Han was in the Imperial Navy and flying TIE fighters. And of course, you know, Valance, you know, has come in and he has taken a hit. And, you know, it's a matter of, you know, Valance, you know, finding himself crashed on this world. And he sees the TIEs fly away, and he's very upset because you're abandoning me. I'm the top cadet in the whole Kurita Imperial Naval Academy.
That was the only line from this book that I thought, really? You're going there?
Well, hey, think about it. This fits Valance's personality, though, especially, you know, during this time frame, because he was very cocksure of himself. Fine, go then. I'll get back to my base on my own. I don't need anybody else.
As he's set upon by a bunch of Kit Fistos.
Yeah, but are these Nautilans, though? I don't know.
They look like it to me.
I don't know. Just the eyes seem to be throwing me because Nautilans have really big, expressive, you know, inky black eyes. But, you know, who knows?
I assume that they were Nautilans. They may not be, but I assume that they were.
So, and that's where we get the inset at the bottom of this page. Are you alone? And boom, we're in the now at the Hun Cabaret Pit, Narkaga. And, you know, we know this is Valance, even though he's wearing a hood and a cloak. And we got a droid going, sir, I asked you if you were alone. My call sign is 49J12, and I will be your party server. There is a 3 admission credit and charge and 2 drink minimum. May I interest you in some Gamorrean ale? No.
Oh, my. And
that's where we see the front. We still don't see Valance's face, but we see his red eye. So we know it's Valance, you know. Oh, my. I'll have you know, this is a reputable establishment, sir, if you say so. And that's where we see our boys. There they are from A New Hope, from the cantina.
And they're probably playing that one song that they know.
Oh, they know more than that.
You're right.
One
they
song.
Know two. Sorry. They're playing one of the two
they
songs.
Know they know more than that. Come on. You read the Star Wars comic version of.
True. True.
And so essentially what has happened here. Is Valance has gone to look for Sifak, you know, who, of course, as you will know, we remember him from Bounty Hunters number 1. And most recently, he was in Dr. Aphra number 6. So you know, he runs Bounty Hunters. He connects Bounty Hunters with jobs. So you know, when you know, it's called Sifak's Bountiful Bounties. So you know, when Nakano Lash resurfaced, and of course, Nakano Lash was the subject of the first arc of this series. He is the one that, Sifak sort of kind of, you know, helped Valance get involved with that. Much to Valance's, I think, ultimate regret.
Right. And for a second, I forgot who that was, and I thought it was a young Lobot. And then I was like, oh, no, no, he introduced himself. I said, okay, that's right, that's Sifak. Just because I saw the, you know, the communication stuff on his back. I like that he says, I was just telling myself that a Rancor couldn't keep away this bondsman from his favorite bounty hunter because he's afraid that Valance has heard him talking about him. And he says, why did you pick this place to meet anyway? It's not exactly discreet. And he says, yeah, but it's public, and Zuckuss and Forlom would have to be sloppy to make a move in such a public place. And Sapphic says, I mean, it wouldn't be that sloppy. Enough small talk. That's not really what small talk means. I was cracking up with this. He says, just tell me about this lucrative job. With all the heat on me right now, I could use the credits. And this is where Sapphic says, oh, yeah, about that. I'm afraid there's been a bit of a misunderstanding. The lucrative job is a hit on you. Which we've just talked about. And so he immediately gets shot at by someone speaking, what is this language? Jeblogian?
Jeblogian. And this is, you know, this is a great introduction here. I love this because, you know, the guy unfurls a cape, has a blaster. So you're the famous Violet Valance, huh? I am not impressed. I could have just shot you in the head, but I want you to see who is pulling the trigger. And Valance is like, kid, I don't even know who you are. And, you know, of course, you know, that's where Sivek is. That's Tazu Leech. He may look young, but he's already the deadliest pit fighter out of Narkanji. And I got him on loan from the Huts. Great. The child prodigy. Plus, he comes cheaper than Fennec Shan. So right then and there, boom, we get two references. Tazu Leech of Kanji Club.
Okay, that's where we know it from. Okay, I couldn't remember.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, Fennec Shan, you know, who is a... this is again well before the events of The Mandalorian, Fennec Shand is, she's already got quite a rather notorious reputation for her work. So, and then of course he's irked Tazu Leech. I am not a child, I am an assassin, and starts just, you know, shooting. And of course, you know, Valance pulls out his Iron Man repulsor ray out of his palm. You know, and knocks Tazu's gun out of his hand. And of course, that's starting an uproar in the crowd, you know, bounty hunter scum. And that's when the band is like, figuring, you've got to start booking us better gigs. I bet this never happens to Fighty and the Sleemos. So, you know, nice little touch there. I like that a lot. And then essentially what comes next is Tazu is trying to prove his mettle, and Valance is holding back. You know, I don't want to hurt you, kid, but, you know, and Taz is like, well, I really want to hurt you, you know, well, you're testing my patience. And so Valance grabs the protocol droid. I love this. Unhand me at once. I am Hutt property, and this is a classy establishment. Just, you know, Valance uses the droid as sort of a shield, and again, Tazu.
As a projectile.
And Tazu is just unfazed here. You think you're a match for me. Even the Hutts fear me. And just cold cocks Valance real hard across the chin. I mean, that's a haymaker right there. And then finally Valance is just, you know, he hits him with his forehead. Crack.
You talk too much. I love that.
So, and, you know, it's been a while since we've seen Tazu Leech, because we only saw him in The Force Awakens, when both, you know, Tazu Leech and Kanji Club had boarded Han and Chewie's freighter along with the Guavian Death Squad. But if you'll recall, we saw Tazu Leech before in Star Wars comics. And I'm not referring to the Force Awakens adaptation. You don't remember at all? It's from our favorite series. Not Dr. Aphra. Our other favorite series.
I'm still not going to remember.
Poe Dameron number 9.
Okay.
So, because, you know, that's, you know, Poe is with 3PO, and they're at a bar, and they're trying to track down Terex, because Terex, you know, may have some knowledge of Lor San Tekka. And so as Poe is in the bar talking to 3PO, in the bar with them are the Guavian Death Gang, and seated at a table is Tazu Leech and Kanji Club. And they're talking about Han Solo because, like, you know, not Chewie, but C-3PO is like, you know, it would be great if we had Han Solo were here. You know, he would be right at home in a place like this. And of course, you know, that's where, you know, Poe says, well, you know, he's unavailable. He's estranged from, you know, General Organa, you know, you know, or C-3PO is saying that. C-3PO says, you know, I think he's returned, you know, he's become a smuggler. And then that's, you cut to this panel. It's Tazu Leech going, wait, what did that droid just say?
I remember that now. Yeah.
He ends up going, because then he overhears 3PO talking about how, you know, Han Solo had to borrow credits from the Guavian Death Gang to sort of underwrite his new smuggling endeavor. And there's like a half a page where Tazu Leech and Kanji Club walk over to the Guavians, start talking, and then all of a sudden they come to an agreement. Wait, we have a common enemy. Let's work together. And then, of course, you know, that sets the stage for what happens in The Force Awakens.
Yes, I do remember that now. It's just been so long since we read it.
Well, I know, and that's fine, and that's okay. It's just something. I was sitting there reading this, you know, because like, oh, it's Tazu Leech, that's great. So I was just doing a quick, because I wanted to make sure I had my background. And I was like, oh, wait, he was in Poe Dameron number 9. And I pulled that up. Oh, yep, there he is.
Yeah,
so
3PO hosed Han yet again.
So, but it's cool, though, you know, because this is a character that now, you know, who didn't really have one or two lines in the movie?
If that, yeah.
And, you know, and literally only had like two lines of dialogue in Poe Dameron number 9. And now we got like 4 or 5 pages of dialogue and we kind of see a little bit of his backstory, which, again, you know, was not expected in the least. So, as you said, I mean, you know, Valance finds out that the contract is on him. And of course, he reacts about as well as you would expect he would react to Sifak. You know, I knew you'd try something stupid like this to collect the bounty on my head. Hey, what are you doing? Looking for my credits. I charge for my time, and my time is quite expensive. And with V'Kora and her syndicate after me, work is hard to come by. So I appreciate the prompt payment. And Sifak is great. This betrayal hurts, Valance. You were one of my favorite bounty hunters. Well, Jesus, yeah, maybe you should have put a bounty out.
Right, I love those people that have, they can feign that, can feign outrage, and yeah, the cognitive dissonance that we have there.
So easily, and then of course this is, you know, we go to the next page, and he is, you know, he's sitting in his ship, the Broken Wing. He's counting the credits, and then he gets a message from Condra, and of course Condra is very critical to the previous two issues, you know, because Valance had gone back to his, you know, his home world where there was a small rebel outpost and had left Cadelia there with Yura, his lifelong love, who has married Condra. So he knows if Condra is messaging him, something's not right. And that's what we find out, right?
Yeah, he says, he tells him, he says, He says, are Yura and Cadelia okay? So I've been surfacing in random ports to try to draw them, the heat off them, but he says, no, they're fine. It's not why I'm reaching out. The favor you owe me, I need it now. Says the scramble to evacuate Lorik, one of our transports suffered a malfunction and dropped out of hyperdrive, but I would assume that would be hyperspace 2 days ago. And the ship is called the Spirit of Jeddah, because of course it is. And he says, as far as I know, the ship's drifting in the terminus, the intersection of the Corellian trade spine and the Hydean Way. And, of course, Valance says that whole corridor is infested with pirates. He says, yeah, well, I can't contact Rebel Command because the Empire has broken our security codes and my orders were to proceed to the rendezvous. So we're reminded that this is happening between Empire and Jedi?
That is correct. Yeah. All the current Marvel Star Wars comics are set between Empire and Jedi.
So that's a nice callback to the previous issue of the main book. And he says, even if I could make contact, they wouldn't allow me to risk more ships to save one lost transport. And Valance says, so those poor souls just get left behind, abandoned by the cause they risked their lives for. And we're like, oh, this is why we got that flashback at the beginning.
Yes, indeed. Because remember, you know, Valance, you know, he'll work for the Rebel Alliance, but he kind of does it like, you know, like while he's holding his nose, you know, because it's almost like he's approaching, but not quite there to DJ territory of, you know, don't join, you know, it's all a machine. But now he's got an emotional attachment to it.
Well, and the guy tells him, he says, that's one calling you, those men and women were my responsibility and your responsibility. Remember, you exposed our outpost and forced an evacuation. It's a quick job. Get in, get out. He says, Valance says, send me the coordinates of the last known position. And he tells him, thank you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. He says, I'm not doing it for you.
And then, of course, he takes off, in the Broken Wing.
But I love that. He's not doing it for them. And he doesn't say, I'm doing it for them. But we kind of know, part of it is he's doing it for the people that are left behind. That's sort of his thing, because he himself, as we've seen, was left behind.
He's very much got a soft spot for people, you know, for whom fate has turned its back on them. So then, of course, that's where we see in the background, you know, we've got Sifek. Well, like I said, Valance, betrayal is going to hurt. And then, you know, Sifek contacts for LOM and Zuckus. And I love this line. Hey, it's Sifek. You know, you two are my favorite bounty hunters, which is why I'm coming to you first with some intel on a certain cyborg. And we cut to Zuckus and Forlom. You know, they're wrapping up another job. You know, Zuckus is ready to resume the hunt if you are, for LOM. The terms of our agreement for Valance's fire ruby have been fulfilled. Valance has had his head start. Just great page here, because it's very little dialogue, and it's a very static page, because, you know, we see Valance in the cockpit of the Broken Wing, and it's, damn you, Han Solo, we're even after this. And you see him punch into hyperdrive and go into hyperspace.
Yeah, he goes in, and we see him go all the way through and come out, which is what is extra interesting to me. When he comes out of hyperspace, he comes out right in the middle of a debris field, basically. He runs right into an X-Wing.
Oh, totally. I mean, and you know, it's the remnants, you know, of apparently of a battle, and he realizes immediately, because it's like, quick job, my, and then, you know, come in, Spirit of Jedha. This is the Broken Wing. I'm here to help. And it's, and he sees the Spirit of Jedha. Nice little name there. I love that, by the way. And we look up, and no, that's not the Enterprise, you know, or a Star Trek.
I sure thought it was to begin with, though.
I'm kind of thinking they did a little homage, especially with the reflector dish at the bottom. Because it does kind of look like the original Enterprise.
It does.
From Star Trek, the original series. And, you know, hey, I'm all for that. Trust me. I'm totally all for those little nods, you know, of popping in a little, little homage to another major science fiction, space fantasy, platform here. But, but it's clearly not, because he finally, you know, he's radioing and, do you read me, Spirit of Jedha? Get out. I'm having trouble receiving you. For force's sake, get out of there. Get out of here. Get out of there. And we find out that these are, in fact, weak way pirate ships. And they are coming in full bore on the Broken Wing. And great illustration here from the exterior shot, you know, where we see the ships, you know, making a pass at the Broken Wing. There's something about this design of the Broken Wing that I really enjoy a lot, because you can tell that, you know, this is a YT series craft, but the way the pylons are added on, it's a nice.
It reminds me of another Star Trek reference, the Reliant from Star Trek II.
Yeah, and that's true.
One of the things that they talked about with that is that they had to take certain design elements from the Enterprise so that we know they're from the same fleet, but they needed to make it distinct enough that in a space battle, you could tell the difference. And it does. This looks like another version of something that would have been produced by the company that made the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, exactly.
You get those same lines. They're just in different formations.
This is totally coming from the Corellian shipyards.
Yes. So. And so you're absolutely right. It's just like, you know, Dash Rendar's Outrider from Shadows of the Empire. You get a lot of the same line, just in a different configuration.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Love that ship, too, by the way. So we cut to the interior of one of the weak way ships. You know, you told us that there wouldn't be much resistance besides the two X-Wings. The only reason we kept you alive is because you swore this was an easy score. You know, have some faith, Captain Scragg. Everyone knows Dengar's word is his bond. There's Dengar in shackles.
In shackles.
I love it. And then, words mean little. I prefer action. I'm not as soft as the previous leader of the Onaka gang.
Reference to Hondo Onaka.
As this intruder is about to find out, all hands fire. And then just the Broken Wing just really just takes a lot. Just boom, 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 boom. And, you know, then we get that final, voice dialogue, you know, come in, Broken Wing, come in, Broken Wing. You know, so I think that's the Spirit of Jedha trying to radio Valance's ship. And we get it to be continued.
Yeah, whole lot happening here. I thought, man, because I thought the whole book was going to be that battle between he and the assassin.
But no, but that was just a lead up to it.
It was. This was a great book, and the cover for next issue, which we'll talk about next month, is very dynamic. I'm really looking forward to it. This was a great intro to this new story arc.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Cannot wait to see what happens next. And you know, when I started with the flashback, I thought, oh, good, another one of these, because that seems to be what this book is half flashback. But they're doing it in a way that you see a lot of times with serialized television. You'll get a flashback that pertains to this episode, or you even get a previously on whatever show, and you'll see clips that are germane to the plot that you're going to see that evening. And I don't mind it so much from that standpoint. So once I saw that it was going to factor heavily into this this storyline, I thought, okay, this is thematic. It's not necessarily narratively necessary, but it's thematically necessary. And I have less of a problem with that than I do with, hey, remember when this happened? So now we can talk about what's going to happen here. So.
Oh yeah. See, I think it's used very judiciously.
Yes.
And you know, to me that's important. So I like how they do that.
Absolutely. So yeah, really, really good book this week. Two really good books. I would suggest picking up both, but you really can't go wrong with either one as far as I'm concerned.
No, not in the least. Not in the least. As a matter of fact, you should probably just pick up both.
I agree. Absolutely. So that will do it for the reviews this week. What do we have for next week?
Allegedly. We have Star Wars Adventures number 3 from IDW Publishing. So fingers crossed. Hopefully that will show up, because it's a Michael Moretti written story featuring we're joining the Wookiees of Kashyyyk for a Life Day celebration. So we will see. Fingers crossed.
Okay, we will see. We'll be back next week to discuss that if it happens, and if not, we'll talk about something else.
Well, exactly, but you know, I'm feeling pretty good. I think it might actually happen. So
I have confidence. I feel good. To quote,
I feel really
Maria
good.
Von Trapp.
Gosh, really? You went there?
Oh, of course I went there. It was on TV last night.
Did you watch it all?
No, I didn't watch any of it. But I've seen it a bunch. It was my dad's favorite movie. So
was it?
Yeah,
now? I had no idea.
Yeah, he saw it like 4 times. Because it played in, he would go to Charlotte. He was in the, we're talking about the Sound of Music, folks, in case you didn't know. He was in the National Guard, I believe. And he would have to go up on maneuvers to Charlotte, North Carolina once a year. And it played there apparently for like 4 years. So every time he went, he would go to see it.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for this edition of Star Wars Splash Page and Musical Theater Today. Until next time, I'm Jeff.
I'm Matt.
May the Force be with you.
Always. For those who celebrate, Merry Christmas.
For those who don't, Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!
Hello and welcome to Star Wars Splash Page comic. I screwed that up. That's not the intro. That's the intro to every other show that I do.
Why not do it?
People will get upset.
Well, they might tweet about.
Right.